So let me start with a few introductory remarks to sort of connect what I see the theme of the meeting. I think there are many kinds of turbulence, and I don't want to argue about which one is true turbulence. I think that control of the properties that Anatole was focusing on, cascade rates, dissipation rates, transport rates, doesn't reside at the smallest inertial scale. Things like intermittency exponents may, but it's very unclear to me what the connection between those different things might be. Anisotropic turbulence, and I'll define the sense of anisotropy in a moment, is very different from isotropic turbulence. And anisotropic is the generic condition of turbulence in nature on large scales. Whether or not there's returned isotropy on small scales, which sometimes there is and sometimes there isn't. Under conditions of anisotropy, it is very common to have what I call balanced dynamics, which again I'll define more precisely in a moment, but it's a quasi-stationary force balance such that the accelerations are not a dominant term in the momentum equation. And yet, anisotropy doesn't characterize all small-scale flows, so there's a phenomenon of the transition to isotropy, for example, in going from large to small scales under many circumstances, and that I'll equate with loss of balance. And so now I at least get to tell you what my title is. That is, I'm concerned with the dynamics of this transition out of balanced anisotropic flows. Now, the subject of balance is a very old one, particularly in geophysical flows. It was first sort of recognized empirically early in the 20th century. It's occupied a very large number of people. My own involvement in it began quite a few years ago, essentially trying to sort out the various possibilities for what might comprise a good dynamical representation of balance. There have been a lot of papers over the years. I've contributed some, but many other people of others, of trying to consider alternative formulations of balance. How do you solve them computationally? Or how do you analyze complex flows to recognize whether they're in a state of balance? And what are the nature of the dynamics of the balance regime? And how accurate are they judged against more fundamental standards, that is, equations in which the Navier-Stokes equations. Now, more recently, we've begun to address a different issue, which is essentially the circumstances under which you lose balance. And I've listed here papers that I've been involved with in recent years. And what I want to do today is not so much to give you a lot of specific results, but to try and describe the point of view that we've developed out of these papers. And the sequence that's here essentially are papers in which we were able to produce some examples of breakdown of balance, first in two space dimensions, then three, to specify rather precisely the mathematical conditions for loss of balance, at least given a particular definition of balance, and then in pursuit of some of the mechanisms of breakdown. And that has brought me back, somewhat, I guess, embarrassingly in the context of a meeting like this, to looking at a number of instability problems, because that is at least one of the ways that one can look at breakdown of balance. Now, of course, instability is interesting to a turbulence community because it leads to turbulence and dissipation and all the rest. But never mind. We don't have the story yet complete, as you will certainly see. Let me first give you sort of an impression of balance in a couple of ways. The first is to show you an instantaneous flow visualization of homogeneous geostrophic turbulence, G geostrophic in the sense of strongly rotating, strongly stably stratified. And this is an instance of the potential vorticity field in a rotating stratified flow, triply periodic boundary conditions, free decay from random initial state. And you see that the potential vorticity is largely trapped into a number of coherent structures on a scale much larger than the dissipation scales. In this symmetric situation, there are just as many positive vortices as there are negative vortices. And there's also a kind of haze partially organized by the coherent structures, what we'll call an incoherent part. This is a solution of exactly balanced equations. This is something that resides entirely within balanced dynamics, globally and persistently. On the other hand, to try and illustrate the opposite extreme, I can take an old figure of Gensu's of one of the depictions of the large amplitude vorticity field in non-rotating, non-stratified isotropic homogeneous turbulence, where with diameters approximately the Kolmogorov scale, the large amplitude vorticity is caught in tubes. And the remark I want to make in this context is that these tubes are, in effect, in a approximately balanced state. The difference between this kind of flow and the one I showed before is that here balance is a very intermittent, evanescent thing. It's only when they develop a very strong vorticity orientation and a long, well-defined axis that they are sort of locally in that state of balance. And when circumstances conspire to move them out of balance, then the vortex tubes explosively fracture. I will define balance quite precisely. And so even in these kinds of flows, and even if your attention is on intermittency, which is associated with extreme events and small scales, although these are sort of ambiguously both large and small, the state of balance is not an irrelevant consideration. So, and then other flows that we've heard about, say the shear flows, my impression is that they're sort of in between these two extremes. They're more in balance. A larger fraction of space and time is in balance than in this classical isotropic homogeneous problem, but it's certainly by no means full time. Things like the coherent structures are pretty close to balance. So let me now start to define balance. And balance is a property of highly anisotropic flows with a preferred direction. I'm going to denote that direction by z and its associated velocity, w. And this is something that typically arises in rotating stratified flows, where it would be the axis of rotation or the direction of gravity that would give you that preferred direction. Also can involve in a shear flow if it's then the direction of the primary vorticity of the background shear flow. And under those conditions, you essentially have two approximations derivable from your momentum equations. One is that there's a hydrostatic balance in the presence of gravity, and the other is that there's a particular force balance, generally referred to as gradient wind balance, between divergence of the pressure gradient force on the left, divergence of the Coriolis force first on the right, and a kind of generalized centrifugal force on fluid trajectories the last term. And so an approximate non-divergent flow for the larger flow in the direction perpendicular to the direction of suppressed velocity. And under these conditions, with these balances approximately holding, you have a reduction of your temporal degrees of freedom and your evolution by, roughly speaking, one-third if you count your phase-based degrees of freedom. And there essentially are then slaving relations of variables like the vertical velocity or the buoyancy or the pressure, the dynamic pressure, to say the stream function. Sometimes this is called the slow manifold, essentially because in the presence of rotation and stratification, there are a number of fast waves, gravity waves, inertial waves, acoustic waves, that aren't characterized by this balanced state, and these have essentially vective rates of evolution. In the extreme case of strong stratification and rotation, the famous quasi-geostrophic equations that is the basis of so much of the analytic theory of geophysical flows arises, but we're talking about situations in which such strong restrictions are by no means required to still have balanced dynamics. And balanced dynamics is characterized by inverse energy cascades, forward cascades of entropy or potential entropy, and is certainly sort of unambiguously dominated by coherent structures when they develop. In contrast, if one asks about what isn't balanced, well, unbalanced dynamics is what has to happen on energetic small-scale flows that have no preferred direction, have very large, for example, Rossby number or Froude number. And so there certainly is no global basis for anisotropy and no global basis for the validity of a balanced dynamical equation set, even though there may be local approximations to it, as I claimed in showing you that vortex tube picture. Now, in this case, the vortex stretching is very strong. All the variance cascades act in a forward direction and towards dissipation, and coherent structures, though they exist, are certainly much less evidently dominant, although one can argue about that too. Now, the primary forcings of the ocean and the atmosphere, stellar systems, et cetera, are in large scales that have important ensuing instabilities that cause cascades to dissipation to sort of complete the energy cycle, et cetera. And these dissipation regimes are often on the unbalanced scale. And so where do the regime transitions occur between balanced and unbalanced, and how fuzzy is the slow manifold? Now, this is by no means a... Well, I guess it's striking as a first remark that these transitions often don't occur. And just let me, rather than trying to show you by certain examples, let me just tell you a certain amount of folklore. Numerical weather prediction has as one of its ingredients that the initial state of any forecast is balanced as exactly as it can be done. There's a notorious failure of a first attempt to calculate the weather by Richardson, the person who taught you that the coastline of England is infinite, because he didn't understand that he had to balance his initial state, and so he essentially predicted the French hurricane, but it didn't happen. That is, he had highly divergent solutions. Any global model of climate, of the ocean or the atmosphere, a general circulation model, has a state that even without anything being done to prejudice the occurrence of balance, ends up with solutions that are almost entirely balanced. And in fact, a good operational definition of what a parameterization is it's a calculation of all the effects for such models of the unbalanced part that their solution doesn't realize. And that's just a matter of evolutionary selection. And then, of course, there are many other phenomenological stories of jets and fronts and eddies on the mesoscale and the general experience that they tend to be balanced. So it's actually rather hard in this class of in this body of science to point to really strong examples of the breakdown of balance, and yet we know from considerations like what I've told you that it has to occur at least some of the time. Now, let's talk about the mathematical characterization of it. Balanced dynamics, even with the approximations I gave you, is non-uniquely defined. There's been, you know, a large industry of different people proposing different flavors of balanced dynamics. And at this point, there's a sense that at least a large class of such proposals are more or less equivalent in their behavior. I want to talk about one very particular class whose equations are written here. The first equation is the conservation of vorticity in the preferred direction, where the absolute vorticity, including the Earth's rotation, changes only through vortex stretching. Chi is the velocity potential and therefore related to the stretching in the vertical direction. This is a strongly shackled vortex stretching. It isn't explosive as in 3D. This is the internal energy equation. Phi is the geopotential. And so this is essentially, well, conservation of temperature, if you will. And then this is the balance relation, which I've written down once before, gradient wind balance. And you can rewrite this system in the following form, this as essentially a matrix operator on three dependent variables that must be solved for simultaneously given the state of the system at a given time in order to advance it further in time. And this operator that must be inverted is a nonlinear operator also based on the state of the fluid at that time. And one can do a PD analysis of this system and note that it changes type from degenerate elliptic to hyperbolic, that is, from balance to something that doesn't seem to make much sense, under any of three conditions. Either there's a change in sign of the second vertical derivative of the geopotential function, which is like pressure, but that's interpreted as the local density gradient in the direction of gravity. A change in sign of the absolute vorticity, and a change in sign of the difference between the absolute vorticity squared and the strain variance associated with the rotational part of the flow, the dominant horizontal part. Now, the first two conditions are very familiar conditions to fluid dynamicists. They're the onset of gravitational instability or convection. The second is the onset of centrifugal instability or inertial instability. And the third is an unfamiliar condition. And it's, I guess we can see two things here. One is that let's assume that it stays stable, so n squared is bounded away from zero. If this is a negative or opposite sign to F, that is, if the flow is anticyclonic, then you're getting close to the possibility of a sign change there. But before you get to a sign change of absolute vorticity, except under extraordinary conditions, you'll get to a sign change of this, because however small a is getting, you're trying to subtract another positive number from it. So this is likely to be the most common condition for the failure of these equations. No, but boy, is this mixed up with Q. I mean, the whole gradient wind balance, you can pull out the Q factor in that, but not precisely the same expression. So we have the following argument here. We believe balance is a quite accurate approximate dynamical system. We can identify precisely where at least one of the more successful and well-tested versions of it fails. We have to imagine now what the implications of that are for the fluid dynamics, which, of course, aren't restricted to these equations. What characterizes balance is that, well, there's so many different ways to say it. The way I'm choosing to emphasize it here is when you have enough flow anisotropy that you have a dominant vorticity in a certain direction, as you do, for example, in the free shear layer, such that you're suppressing at least some class of fluctuations in the direction of the dominant vorticity. And that leads to quasi-static force balances, which allow a reduction of the temporal degrees of freedom. That's what I'm about to talk about. So let's go about, for the remaining time, trying to interpret what violation of these conditions might mean. And firstly, we can simply plug into the classical literature on parallel flow instability, and without stepping through the conditions, let me just remark that the necessary and sufficient conditions for linear instability of symmetric flows to symmetric perturbations, either in parallel or axisymmetric geometry, coincides with the instability conditions or the loss of balance conditions, the loss of integrability of the balance equations. So this is an exact match for these special symmetry flows, and we know that the loss of the instabilities that ensue when these flows are unstable to symmetric perturbations are to small-scale quasi-isotropic and, of course, unbalanced types of motion. The next problem that we found helpful to think about is the problem of elliptical instability, which is an aerodynamic literature problem of a deformed axisymmetric vortex, but we here want to look at it in the context of a rotating stratified deformed axisymmetric vortex. And it was analyzed extensively in the early 80s for non-rotating unstratified. Miyazaki looked at the rotating stratified case, but he didn't interpret the answer in the way that we're trying to ask the question. And what we have found, and I'll show you a figure for it in a moment, is that in fact the first strong elliptical instability occurs essentially with and simultaneously with this third previously uninterpreted condition for loss of balance. The illustration of that is this picture of normalized growth rates as a function of the absolute vorticity minus the strain magnitude in a normalization here such that one corresponds to the classical quasi-geostrophic limit, that is, Rossby number goes to zero, extreme rotation stratification dominance, and minus one corresponds to the classical centrifugal instability, the change of sign of absolute vorticity, and zero then corresponds with this third condition. And for three different values of the ratio of strain and vorticity in this flow, you see that the growth rate sort of explosively takes off right at this condition. On the other hand, it doesn't coincide exactly, and we do trust our numerics enough to say that it's not a precise characterization, but it certainly is in the neighborhood of this condition. The most recent work we've done that carries us as far as we presently understand the story is to the Taylor-Couet problem, which Harry talked about this morning. And the particular wrinkle we are focusing on is to look at a stably stratified Taylor-Couet problem and to look in the centrifugally stable regime. What Harry talked about this morning, which has very much been the historical focus, whether stably stratified or not, is when you have one cylinder fixed, the other rotating, and you can show that always allows you to satisfy the conditions for centrifugal instability. And so this kind of instability has been the primary focus of Taylor-Couet studies. We are deliberately looking outside of satisfying the Rayleigh condition for centrifugal instability. And just the basic form of the flow, and I just want to introduce A and B here, is of this form so that you essentially have your viscous operator be zero for the base state. We look at perturbations about that. We focus on non-symmetric perturbations, so we're not looking at the classical centrifugal problem. And in particular, we're looking for growing normal modes. And just to define parameters here, we are concerned with the influence of stratification, here defined as a particular Froude number for the mean flow, this being the mean angular rotation rate of the base state, and a shear number or a strain number associated with the differential flow across the gap of the Taylor-Couet flow compared to the mean. And this is a kind of Rossby number. This, of course, is an inherently positive number. This is a signed variable related to the A and B signs this way. And our result is that we find instability essentially for all values of S less than zero, that is, anticyclonic flows, in the conditions in which you're close to that third condition for loss of balance. And here are plots of the the growth rate curves as a function of this 1 over this number. So this number 1 coincides with centrifugal instability. Rossby number equals minus 1. And this axis going out to infinity is the approach to the quasi-geostrophic balance. And what you see is that for a variety of different Froude numbers, there's essentially growth at a function that at least once the Rossby number is not too close to the centrifugal instability, is a straight line on this curve, which means it's an exponentially weakening instability. The growth rate goes like e to the minus 1 over Rossby number as the Rossby number goes to 0. That is, it's a vanishingly weak instability compared to normal shear flow instabilities where the shear is above critical, then the growth rate's proportion to the supercriticality, et cetera. And this number 2 coincides with the third condition of loss of balance. So here we see, if you will, an even more confusing result. On the one hand, we, by having this hypothesis, we found a new instability where none had been found before. On the other hand, we're finding one for which this particular value is not uniquely distinguished. On the other hand, it is being identified as a critical value with, if you call it, an exponential approximation. So the interpretation of this, I mean, is not nearly as simple as the interpretation of the symmetric instabilities where the critical conditions exactly coincide with loss of balance. Here we have an association of outbreak of an unbalanced mode with an exponentially increasing efficiency of growth rate when you're in the neighborhood of what was identified as a critical condition for the balanced model. And so if we're concerned with questions like, is the breakdown progressive or explosive? Is the slow manifold fuzzy? Does it cease to exist exactly or merely become less important? There still is plenty of room for uncertainty about these kinds of issues. Just very briefly to finish by showing the unstable eigenmode here in the azimuthal direction over one period of it, here in the radial direction across the gap. This is supposed to be R1 minus R2 over R bar. They got dropped for somewhere in the midst of the instability. You see the vertical velocity and contours, the horizontal velocity and arrows. This helps one recognize the mechanism here. The mechanism is that you have an underlying inertia gravity wave that is boundary trapped. This is sometimes called a Kelvin wave in rotating stratified flows. The shear flow, however, allows an arrest of that propagating inertia gravity wave in a way that can phase lock between the two boundaries and develop a Reynolds stress, a U prime, V prime, that it can extract energy from the mean flow. So it's a particular combination of shear dynamics and inertia gravity wave dynamics that is, of course, classically considered to have no relation to balance at all. So this is, of course, an unbalanced mode. One can make a regime diagram for this. We've only exerted ourselves slightly. I suppose it's interesting that this is 13,000. But you know, fixed points and periodic and period doubling, and you're on your way to chaos and fully developed turbulence, and you know, we haven't fully tracked it. But it does, in that sense, certainly look like a particular mechanism for the breakdown of balance. So let me conclude somewhat inconclusively with sort of the state of the inquiry. I've asked you to just take on faith my assertion that the balance equations are a very useful, accurate model for a good deal of the large-scale flows in the world, including weather and climate, and a lot of other stuff on what's called the mesoscale in the ocean and the atmosphere. That the defining conditions for the regime of this as represented in a particular PDE system that although it can't be proved to be an accurate approximation of the fundamental equations, there's a great deal of anecdotal illustration of the fact that it is, when you can, in the conditions where it, solutions exist. And at least for several canonical steady flows, that the violation of these conditions leads to the onset of vigorous instabilities. Convective, inertial, symmetric, elliptical, and Taylor-Couette, we've sort of surveyed, but not necessarily that the coincidence is precise. It may be simply approximate. I mean, in some instances, it's approximate. That is, the instability gains strength in the vicinity of the condition rather than exactly at it. And we at least have a certain limited experience that these things do lead, when they arise, to 3D turbulent cascades at high Reynolds number. So we're at a stage of conjecturing that violating these conditions for non-stationary evolving balanced states will coincide with the breakdown, although we don't know whether to a larger degree, a larger small degree in general, into small-scale 3D isotropic, more isotropic cascades to dissipation. And we can at least imagine, since a lot of the large-scale flows, even when they violate these, only violate them weakly, that sometimes these breakdowns may be merely temporary, with some dissipative rearrangement leading to then some sort of restarting of the process. But these are definitely conjectures. Thank you. They very clearly are in a centrifugal force balance, in the sense that the radial pressure gradient, they're nearly axisymmetric when not being disturbed by neighboring flows, and the radial pressure gradient is balancing the centrifugal force around them. And in an axisymmetric sense, without Coriolis forces, this is a canonical simple case of what's called cyclostrophic balance. They have, they're certainly anisotropic in the sense that when they're well formed, the scales along the axis are larger than the scales across the axis, and they definitely satisfy the condition that Marcel was talking about, that they're very dangerous to all fluctuations in their neighborhood because of the strong vorticity dominance of suppressing vertical motions in those fluctuations. And so a kind of local neighborhood of because you've got a dominant vorticity structure, you have a suppressed axial fluctuation along it. On the other hand, as I hope I made clear, they weren't balanced getting there. They had to be strongly stretched to get there, and they're not balanced when they break down. And so it's ephemeral in such flows. Kelvin-Helmholtz actually does reasonably well starting as a balanced instability. But of course, to the extent that it breaks down in 3D into braids, I mean, those are things that surely don't stay balanced very far down the cascade. But to the extent that Anatole was trying to argue for conceptually making a model of a free shear layer, paying mostly attention to the coherent structures and just accepting that they have a certain loss of information to smaller scales, that's a picture that one could realize on the balanced manifold. Well, when we hear stories like that, we conjecture things like that. Now, I actually am less familiar in detail with Tolman-Schlichting-Lang's ways, so let me not comment on that one. Yes. We just are not terribly far along in a test of what you would call a generic evolving balanced flow that somehow violates these conditions. I told you everything I know of a sort of firm sort. We have not yet. I have a great deal more confidence in situations which are globally anisotropic and globally balanced. I think that picture is quite clear. We're talking about now other situations that may be statistically isotropic and locally, temporarily anisotropic, and I am attempting to be provocative to an audience like this by arguing that they are at least close to balance in some measure that has not yet been, you know, sort of well demonstrated. But it's certainly not a permanent state. I have a suspicion they are too. Certainly, a lot of the plume structure we see, particularly in rotating convection, is close to balance, some places, sometimes. I guess I'm being successful in my provocative statements. The thing I knew the least about, namely the degree to which statistically reasonably isotropic flows are locally approximately balanced, is all very conjectural. And I think a number of the objects we're talking about, pre-shear layer vortices, convective plumes, are things that in some mixture yet to be sorted out are partly balanced, partly unbalanced. And so... Okay.